90 The Fan, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Ailish Warfire.
Joining us now, former Toronto Raptors forward, 2019 NBA champion, and this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Malcolm Miller, good morning, man. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
Good, man. It was nice to catch up with you a little bit on the weekend, and really nice to see you. You're the king of Raptors Twitter now with in-game tweeting?
Yeah, I don't know how that came about. And, you know, I was just watching the game, decided to put some of my thoughts out, and received a lot of love from it.
Yeah, it's the only way to get more is, I know we talked a little bit about the Leafs-Eagles parallels, but if you make fun of the Leafs as well during a Raptors game, then the Raptors fan base will be, you know, they'll crown you. They'll crown you.
I don't know if my knowledge about the Leafs extends that far, so, you know, I'm gonna leave that topic alone.
Well, that doesn't stop me and JD from talking about the Leafs, so why would it stop you? But no, Malcolm, you, before we get into the series and the game the other day, you do still seem to have a pretty strong connection to the city and to the fan base. How cool is that for you? As you know, obviously you won a championship here, but to kind of still feel like a part of the Raptors fabric.
Oh no, it feels amazing. I mean, I spent 3 years in the city. I enjoyed every year. The fans were the greatest. You know, it was a nice atmosphere and it was a nice time there. So it feels really good to know that, you know, I could still get love. I haven't been there since the pandemic started. So, I mean, I'd love to get back out there, and I know I receive love every time. So it's always a good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, you don't name your dog North without a connection to the North, right?
Exactly.
So you were tweeting during game four the other day, and I know you've been following along the entire series. What have you noticed that's been the biggest change in terms of the Raptors making game three so competitive and then taking game four?
I really saw the competitiveness and just the aggressiveness and physicality increase, you know. And there was one point, I want to say, in the fourth quarter where I want to say Embiid slipped and fell down, and all you saw was Pascal and Gary Trent Jr. just sandwiching him in the post, fighting against him. He ended up getting the offensive rebound, but it was a block, and next thing you know, he ended up on the floor again. You know, those are the little things, you know, making your presence be known that I know they're talking about in the locker room. The high pickup points on Harden, you know, stopping the ball at half court, you know, making sure no pass is easy. Just those are all the little things that, you know, was talked about when I was there that I see reflected in that game that made a big difference.
So I want to keep going with some of the adjustments that Nurse is making and some of the things that this team needs to do, like that is within their control. But when you talk about that physicality, the thing that comes to mind for me is how the whistle really did shift from Philly to Toronto. And I'm a guy who hates bringing it up and who hates mentioning or blaming the referees. I think that we do it too far. Like, we really take it too far as fans a lot of times, and especially in media in the city as well. But it's hard not to notice that Embiid only goes to the free throw line, you know, for the 9 shots in the last game versus him in Philly, where it felt like it was way more touch fouls. And I wonder how hard it is as a player to kind of adjust to the different kinds of officiating. Like, if they show up tonight and all of a sudden it's a little bit closer to the touch fouls where Embiid is flopping and he is getting those calls, how much harder it's going to be for the Raptors to defend if it is a different whistle.
Right. I mean, that's always in the back of your mind. I mean, you want to play your game. You don't want it to be 8-on-5 and so on, but you know, the rest are humans and they're going to blow how they see the game. So this game, we set the tone from the beginning, and so the refs just had to follow. So it was definitely more in our favor, I would say, this game. But regardless of the situation and the refs, you know, you gotta play with that mentality that, you know, you're gonna play your game and adjust how you see fit.
So Malcolm, another thing that changes as the series changes locations, and this is something that gets talked about, and you know, sometimes it feels like it's just a talking point to explain home court advantage. But then you look at some role players on these teams, and a lot of role players do shoot a little better at home. You were someone who shot better at Scotiabank Arena than you did on the road. What goes into that in terms of that role player comfort at home versus on the road?
I mean, a part of it, I mean, it's different for every player, but it could just be the fan base. It could be the, you know, the lighting in the gym or whatever. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the court is the same size. The baskets are the same height. So, you know, you want to keep that same mentality of, like, I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to make it and continue forth. But, you know, that presence at home does just make a difference. You know, knowing when you make that shot, the fans are going to go crazy.
Yeah, we've all seen Hoosiers. We know the courts are the same size, the baskets are the same height and everything.
Even if you haven't seen Hoosiers, you've seen that clip now.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
So, Malcolm, in terms of the Raptors' defensive system and what they have been doing to adjust to Embiid, and JD made the whistle comment, and obviously that's a real factor, but more tactically, have you seen them do anything different as the series has gone along in terms of, you know, where they're trapping him or how they're making it difficult for him to get the ball? Because it has seemed that he's gotten progressively less comfortable, I mean, at least the first half of game three and for the most part in game four.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's just the thing with Embiid. I mean, he's a great player. He's great back to the basket. And then when he faces up, it's a whole different scenario. So, I mean, they're going to continue to throw different looks at him between trapping when he catches the ball, trapping when the ball's in the air, rotating out of those double teams, whether they're trapping from the nail, trapping from the closest defender, from the perimeter. You know, they kind of threw a little bit of everything at him at that point. But during the beginning of the game, I mean, I'm obviously not in the locker room, but it did look like they were just trying to get the ball out of his hand quick as possible so that later in the game he would have to think about, you know, when the trap's coming, you know, get him on edge a little bit. And it did seem to work because, you know, you saw the turnovers that he had during the game. And, you know, who knows if that's going to be the same adjustment coming into the next game just because, you know, obviously they're getting a game plan for it. But, I mean, they're definitely covering every trapping scenario, every rotation scenario, and just realizing what they want to give up and what kind of looks they want to give him.
Yeah, he doesn't look very comfortable when he has to throw a cross-court pass out of those double teams, but I was going to say that he looked pretty comfortable in Game 3, Blake, when he was wide open at the end of the game, getting the cleanest look in the history of the league.
Well, I said the first half of Game 3, career-defining bucket he made.
Yes, of course. But, okay, so what about the other side of the court here, Malcolm? Because, I think that you can see at least what Toronto is trying to do defensively with Embiid, how they're trying to handle him. But like you mentioned it, you're throwing different looks, you're trying different things because great players adjust. And yeah, he's got some really nice pieces around him. But offensively, it doesn't look like they're going to have Fred. And if they do have Fred, it's not going to be a full version of him. I don't think that you go from having a hip injury that you walk off the floor and then a couple of days later, you're like, oh, I'm 100%. Don't worry, I feel amazing. How do the Raptors counter losing Van Vliet? And do you think that they can still find a way to paper over the loss of that player?
I mean, you know me. I got too many friends on the team to ever said that they can't do anything. So, I mean, of course I believe in my heart that they're going to find a way. It's going to be next man up. You know, injuries are a part of the game. I'm well aware of that. But it's just a matter of, you know, finding that next opportunity. Who's going to step up, as you see in the last game? Thaddeus Young really stepped up in that game. He was that X factor that really brought that energy. Chris came off the bench and, you know, made a bunch of hustle plays, you know, what I expect from Chris. And it's just, you know, that next man up mentality. So it's a matter of them, you know, moving the ball and creating easier opportunities, you know, for Pascal to get in the lane without, you know, so much of a crowd. OG being able to get to the basket and shoot the three, and then Scotty being able to do, you know, the things that he does that made him Rookie of the Year.
And Malcolm, you mentioned OG, and we know you're tight with him. You guys are buddies. So you can speak on this personally. What have you liked from him stepping up in this playoff series and his personal success and development, especially down the stretch here when it really matters?
I mean, he's playing with a lot more freedom. He's playing a lot more loose, and he's playing with so much confidence in his game. So, I mean, he's always had the skill set. You know, he can put the ball on the floor. He can shoot the three, and, you know, he can make those type of plays, and he's a willing passer. So, you know, those things culminate into him, you know, having a great season and continually improving as he is. So, you know, he realizes, I mean, he's played against this team before. He's played in the playoffs before. He's been a starter, heavy minutes guy and postseason play. So he understands what it takes. He understands what needs to happen. He understands his role.
We do this with starting pitchers sometimes because we have this guy, Alek Manoah, here, where one of the things that people admire about him is that when he's struggling, his game doesn't really change. Like, he stays the same way, the same level of aggression. And OG struggled in that last one, but what I really liked is that he kind of kept with it. The game didn't change. He kept taking the same shots. The body demeanor didn't really change at all. He stayed aggressive, and I really liked that. And it's going to be tougher for Pascal Siakam this next game to do that, right? Like, 34 points is not the most sustainable thing. But for him to stay aggressive, like, I think it's better if a more educated eye like yourself tells us about, like, the importance of him kind of putting that pressure on the rim from start to finish and how pivotal it's going to be for the Raptors to continue to have success in this series tonight.
For sure. I mean, Pascal playing at that level is an all-star 10 times out of 10. So it's really a matter of, you know, him continuing to do what he does, but also, you know, him getting some scoring from around the perimeter. That way people aren't, you know, clogging the paint. Everyone obviously knows he's going to be downhill. He's going to spin. He's going to get in the paint. And he's a willing passer as well. But it's a matter of, you know, being able to knock down those kickouts at a consistent rate, you know. I mean, teams are probably going to live with those kickout threes from everyone else, but and try to, you know, limit Pascal's scoring opportunities. But it's a matter of, you know, he's got to do both. He's got to do both, and everyone's got to knock down the shots, and everyone's got to be functioning as a unit and 100% go.
So, Malcolm, there's a quick turnaround here between games. I don't know how much time on the court these guys have actually gotten, but one of the things that I wanted your perspective on, because during that championship run, you were part of the scout team, and you gave me some good insight into, hey, the guys who maybe aren't going to play as much are really helping the starters get ready. And this is a pretty big game where I would expect Philadelphia to come out and give Pascal Siakam some pretty different looks after the game that he had. How valuable is it for these top guys to have the scout team experience to play against? And what was your experience kind of getting the main guys ready for each successive round in the playoffs?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely important. It takes a full team to win. So, you know, that's first and foremost. And whether it's in practice going over how Pascal's going to be trapped, how they're going to double, how he's going to be defended, which gaps they're going to give him, which gaps are going to close down. You know, that's just part of everyone on the floor knowing and understanding the game plan and also going along and accepting the game plan. So it starts from, you know, the starters to the bench. You know, when it comes down to the playoffs, people on the bench are calling out the other team's plays. People are calling out, you know, what rotations we're supposed to be in. And it's a full team effort to realize, you know, how to make things easier for people and how to make things more complicated for the other team.
So how do the Raptors win tonight? What's going to be the most important thing for you?
You know, them continuing to be the players that they are, you know, making shots that I know that everyone can hit. And just keeping up that physical defensive mentality. I mean, you know, if the shot doesn't go in, everyone says you can't let your defense affect your offense. So, I mean, you can't let your offense affect your defense, vice versa as well. But, you know, it's high pickup points, strong rotations, and just contesting all shots. All the little things that allow them to win game three is going to be the exact same thing that allows them to win game four.
I know you're not too far away now, but are you going to sneak out to Philly for tonight or what?
I doubt it. I'm probably going to get my Twitter fingers ready and, you know, be ready to support the team from afar.
There you go. New fatherhood, I guess. Eh? You can't sneak out for a road game all that often.
Yeah.
We look forward to seeing those tweets and that analysis tonight, and hopefully, hey, Thursday as well, if the Raptors can extend this series. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Appreciate you. Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on. Go Raptors. Hope my boys win again. You know, I'm always rooting. Love the city. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Malcolm Miller, former Raptors forward, 2019 NBA champion. The guy names his dog North. The guy's rooting the Raptors on Twitter, and that insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. I think one of the best things that you can say and pull from the culture that the Raptors have built here over this era is that a guy like Malcolm does still feel like part of the fan base, or even a guy like Sam Decker, who is cut a couple games in the season, is now playing over in Turkey, is also like live tweeting games and like posting photos celebrating Scotty Barnes. You know, you see Jordan Lloyd the odd time still tweeting about the team and stuff like that. I think there's a real connection once guys have been here, and especially if you've had some success here, that sustains where, you know, Malcolm Miller didn't play a lot of games for the Raptors, and he didn't play a lot of minutes for the Raptors, but he does feel like a part of this Raptors era, and that it's always going to be great to have him come on the show and either share his thoughts on the current team or reminisce. And it's always going to be interesting to get his perspective on OG's development or Sam Decker's perspective on Scotty Barnes' development, all those things. I think mm-hmm. it speaks a lot to the culture they've built here.
I mean, he won a championship here, and yeah, so I think that anybody that's on the championship roster is going to get that little bit of an extra bump. I didn't want to ask him about Gary Trent because I didn't know how to frame it other than how good has Gary Trent been. Like, I didn't know.
Good. Great.
I couldn't really think about what the Gary Trent question was, like, or how important is he to the offense to continue playing this way, because it's been both sides of the ball, right? Like, he's been creating havoc in defensive lanes, and he's been getting in there with some of those, like, pretty classic Gary Trent Jr. Interception plays. I thought that part of the Raptors game, like, that it shifted in the fourth quarter at least a little bit with the defensive play that he made. It was a huge,
well, he had a couple
huge
of the norms, right? The yes. steal that you take the other way for the dunk from the norm spot. He didn't let it bobble around in his hand like game yeah. five Pacers norm. Thank God.
By the way, he had the 2-on, I can't remember if it was a 2-on-0 or 2-on-1, and I think he was running with Siakam, and Siakam's going for those points, and he went, "You're not getting this ball, buddy." He's going, nope. He's going up. But I got to tell you that Gary Trent in this series, and I think if we're doing things of evaluation of playoff players, right, of who is better come playoff time, that Gary Trent's aggression is going to frustrate you in a regular season where you want to see more from Scotty Barnes. It's going to frustrate you more during a regular season when you're seeing this 82 times and the games and the stakes are completely different. But his aggression level and his fearlessness, because we did fearlessness with Scotty Barnes, right? Fearlessness with Scotty when he first showed up. Fearlessness with OG after the Scotty Barnes injury and when he tried to carry this offense on the road. Fearlessness with Pascal with all the pressure on his shoulders in that game four and having to bounce back, and he showed it by getting the line. Gary Trent has been the most fearless Raptor in this entire series, whether it's been trying to gut it out through that sickness, and then since he has come back, hunting his shot. And some of them have not been the best. Like, you're never going to get 100% shot rate from Gary Trent Jr. where you go, oh, great look. But the Raptors don't have a ton of guys that can create for themselves. And they certainly don't have a ton of guys who can create for themselves off the dribble and knock down a jump shot. And so one of my biggest kind of takeaways with this team has been sort of recalibrating the way that I feel a little bit about Gary Trent and his importance to this team moving forward. Like, they need his offense. And if you're looking at guys that need to have big games tonight, right? Siakam is at the head of the snake. There's no question about it. But number two on the list to me is not OG. It's actually Gary Trent. Like, he is putting the vast majority of the pressure on that defense outside of Siakam. And he's been brilliant this series. And I just think that there are some guys who frustrate you in the regular season, but who can step up in a playoff series. And, like, he was 3 of 10 from three from last game. That's not great. But it really was great. Like, they needed him to be 3 of 10 from three. And I hope he's bombs away again tonight.
And I know that, you know, the famous Draymond thing or whatever of 82 game players and 16 win players. Well, I also think that there's a difference between 24 second shot clock players and 5 or 6 second shot clock players, where there are some guys who, yeah, maybe they're going to make bad decisions early in the clock, or they're not, you know, overall a net efficient player. But as the shot clock winds down, or hey, as a playoff series rolls on and offense becomes at more and more of a premium, there are certain guys who that they don't operate any differently in that situation than they do normally. And Gary's, whether it's his confidence, whether it's the footwork, whether it's the fact that he's always happy to take a shot, that is something that's completely unique in this rotation. There's no one else. Like, obviously Siakam and Fred can get a shot off when they need to, but it's not their natural instincts to be like, oh, every time the ball swings to me, jab, step, step back, jumper.
And Fred's is still more surprise you with a pull up that's like 3 feet right behind the 3-point line,
right,
rather than it is beat someone up.
Yeah, it's
off
like, oh, you went under the screen a little too casually, yeah, bang. Gary Trent is more than happy to do that. And we talk a lot about how, you know, for the last couple of years, the thing missing on the on this Raptors team, and especially since Norman Powell left, is the ability to put pressure on the rim. Event creation, I called it the other day on our show. And Gary Trent Jr. isn't that in terms of the rim, but hey, modern defenses are going to give you a lot of space in the mid-range, and that step back three he has is, I don't know, it's not Harden-esque, but it's in that second tier of, oh my God, how do you even defend this? The footwork's so pristine. So he can thrive in the areas that defenses let you thrive. So, and I think that's going to look even better next to a Siakam having a good game. It's going to look even better if you look forward, if they do add someone like a poor version of Maxey or whatever who can pressure the rim a little bit. Mm-hmm. The more space you give Gary Trent to operate in, I think the better he's going to look. So space will be at a premium tonight for sure.
He creates it.
Especially with Fred VanVleet out. And yeah, he creates it. And that's going to, you know, see it. You could talk about who do the Raptors need a big game from. Siakam is obviously one, and then Trent next. Siakam needs Trent too. Because yes, if Fred doesn't play in that game, again, they're still not respecting OG at the level of, like, they're still daring the Raptors to run offense through OG, which is the smart thing to do. I would do the same thing if I were them. Gary Trent is the guy that you're never going to put two on him. He's going to have a single guy on him just by nature of the Raptors offense. And yeah, Siakam needs Gary to be that secondary scorer for him, because otherwise those traps are just going to be unyielding.
Well, the one thing that I would be trying to impose upon Gary Trent, and tonight is probably not the best night to do it, but from moving forward, is if you can unlock a little bit of that playmaking, if you can unlock a little bit of a two-man game with someone in a pick and roll, mm-hmm, where the roll man is a threat, that's going to change things for you in a lot of different ways. But in terms of stock up, stock down for Raptors players throughout the postseason, my stock up for Gary Trent is higher than any other Raptor, because my stock was already very high on Barnes. I wasn't surprised that he didn't look afraid of a playoff moment. I was surprised the degree of success he had in game one, but now he's been hurt and it's been harder to judge over the course of the entire series. He was good the last game, but good by a rookie standard. Good by the, fourth or fifth most impactful guy, like, at best. When we're talking about the Raptors last game, like, it wasn't exactly that. He's had one great game. OG, my stock was already very high on in terms of, boy, this guy in the playoffs is that guy. He's the one who hit the shot off the Kyle pass. What did he say? I don't expect to miss, or whatever the line was. I don't shoot trying to miss. Like, OG has always been someone where he's a steady hand. He's the cowboy Western movie guy, the make my day guy. Like, that's just OG. That's who he is. Gary Trent, I've seen him play in Portland. I've seen him in the postseason before. You can tell that those reps have worked for him, that he's very comfortable in these games. But now with the added ability to kind of take over in some of these moments, you saw the bubble Gary Trent a little bit there, right? The guy who was a little bit more willing of a scorer, someone who could take over a game. And I've seen that from him here, and it really has caused a lot of Gary Trent stock up, where you go, I'll deal with some of the frustrations of a regular season from this player so long as you get this version of the guy come playoff time. So very, very, very nice for Gary Trent. The Wake and Rake is next. I don't know how we fared on Friday.
Two and one.
Did I lose?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel
that
like
Trae Young, that Trae Young bucket.
You pea-brained dope.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I lost by one point.
I love it.
I lost by one point. By the way, I was out at
brain dope.
I was out at a local establishment where they had a nice big screen on the patio. Shout out Cafe Dip for that game.
Cafe Dip? I didn't even heard of that. Sounds good.
Diplomatico? You never heard of that?
Yeah.
Oh, Diplomatico. Okay. Well, sorry. Yeah. I didn't know. Okay. I know the long-term version. I'm not up to snuff with the short-term.
JD had to dine and dash because of his waking rate.
They lost that game. Trae Young hit that floater, and on a classy patio, I let out a, no! It wasn't the best look for me, 10 Peronis deep, but either way, it was great. The Wake and Rake next, our best bets for tonight, and a setup for the Raptors game as well, a betting preview for them. The Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ailish, Sports F5 Night of the Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rake and rake. Bing bong, let's make some cash. Let's make some money. Let's get those dollar bills. Let's do it the hard way. Nice hits for Blake and Ailish on the weekend. I really wish I would have been a part of the squad that we would have hit the 3-for-3. Unfortunately, Trae Young had other ideas with that floater at the end of the game. The heat just...
Worst part about that one is that the Hawks come out and lay another complete egg in game four.
I know.
I could live with it if it was going to make it a series. And it's like, no, that was your one game and then you're back to being embarrassing.
Yeah, you're back to being the Hawks. You did the Hawks thing. And you, you just cost me money one day. At least I bet the Heat on the weekend. I stayed true with it, stuck with the Heat. The problem is that I also stuck with my belief that the Suns were going to win this series despite no Devin Booker. And now, poor Chris Paul. All I got to say is just what poor Chris Paul. And I bet you it's going to be a Scott Foster game.
Put him in the rage quit chamber.
Yeah. What Herb Jones or Scott Foster, both those guys coming to lock up Chris Paul potentially in game 5.
Did you see the CJ McCollum quote about Herb Jones last night?
I did not.
It was amazing. He was like, I've never seen a rookie completely unfazed like this who just like, the moment doesn't matter. He's been so awesome defensively. I know that was a big JV.
I mean, he's a 32-year-old rookie. He's like Michael Bunting, but yes, I agree. Like, yeah, it's like.
Okay,
it's
well, like, let's see Bunting lock up, Kucherov.
Let's see Bunting play. At least we're getting some reports right now. I just saw in our text group that it's been reported that Bunting will be available for the playoffs, so that's a good thing. That's a really good thing for that Leafs team because, boy, I don't know if they could put Abruzzese in the top line come playoff time. Okay, so Wake and Rake, picks, gambling. The Raptors, let's start with them. They hit the road, and they are 7.5-point dogs. Total's 209.5, which means that the books are expecting a rock fight that they don't think that there's going to be a lot of scoring in this game. You get the Matisse Thybulle thing. He enters the game again. He enters the fray. How much does the price get affected, do you think, by Fred VanVleet?
I think it's already probably accounting for Fred not being at full health. So I look at the line movements game to game over the course of a series to try to figure this out. And game 2 opened at -7.5 and went to -8.5 in favor of Philly. So you think, well, this is the same line. What's changed? Scotty Barnes didn't play in game 2. We didn't know about the status of Thad Young and Gary Trent for game 2. And those guys being back now, this line suggests to me they are not anticipating Fred VanVleet playing. And if they are, it's not a fully capable Fred VanVleet. With a Fred in a full go mode, with Embiid dealing with a torn ligament in his thumb, you'd expect this probably to be a little closer to 5.5. But this is, this to me says no Fred or a very hobbled Fred, which I think is a safe bet.
I think this is a huge James Harden game. He's been good in the series, and actually he's been a lot even better than I expected in the series. Like, his explosion is not the same, but his ability to handle the rock and to draw people into dumb fouls and to keep, again, you off balance, it's been super impressive. This is a spot where it's going to be a no play for me because I just want to enjoy the game, and I don't generally bet on Raptors postseason games anyways unless it's like the odd player prop. But for me in this one, this is the Philly legacy game. I said it earlier in the show, but Philly drops this game and they have to go back to Toronto with the weight of it being 3-3 and the weight of being the first franchise to go from 3-0 to losing a series to having the coach that notoriously blows the 3-1 leads with Embiid grabbing his thumb on every single play. I don't know. I think the Sixers need this game. I think that they're going to give the Raptors their heaviest punch. And so my lean here is that the Sixers close out the series if I'm just looking at this from a gambling perspective. But again, I don't want to have any of that stake. I don't want to have any of that money on the line. So it's going to be a no play for me tonight.
I think, too, Phil, if you're Philly, and I said as much heading into the weekend, but now that we know just how serious the Joel Embiid thumb thing is, it doesn't sound like rest is going to make that any better. Like, he needs surgery.
No, it's the playoffs.
Ending the series earlier still gives him fewer games where that thing can get hacked at, gives you a few days of rehab or treatment or whatever, so maybe it feels even 10% better for that game 1 against Miami. I think Philly's going to want to – they're going to want this. And as for the Harden game, his over-under on points is at 21.5. He had 22 last game and did not shoot very efficiently at all. I think Toronto's game script has clearly for games 3 and 4 tilted in the direction we expected, which is make Harden beat you as a scorer a little bit more, and the focus isn't going to come off Joel Embiid. So
I think
I
think this comes down to who you think is going to crumble under pressure or rise to it. And I think the Raptors did that successfully on Saturday. They had their backs up against the wall and they were able to elevate. And tonight's game is completely on the Sixers needing to prove themselves and not want to come back to Toronto. I'm going to go with how I felt going into Saturday, that the Raptors are that chippy, tough to play against team, and they could certainly have this little bit of momentum. So it depends on who you believe has the fortitude to not be weakened by the moment.
Right. 7.5 points is a lot of points, too. Also, mm-hmm. if you're expecting a close, chippy rock fight of a game like that, you know, the over-under suggests they expect a lower scoring one. The best Raptors games in this series have been the lower scoring ones. Mm-hmm. And Ailish, if you think that the Raptors, you know, what you laid out is maybe not a case for a win, but a case that at least they're going to go down swinging. And 7.5 points is a lot of points in that mm-hmm. case, right? Like,
that's true.
I know there was the blowout in game one, and game two was a blowout, but they also like fought to the final buzzer at least with mm-hmm. that 15-0 run late. I don't know. It's hard to imagine the Raptors getting walked off the floor. But
I can imagine it. It's not that hard to imagine. It's not that hard to imagine. I was going to say, like, I've already seen it happen twice, Blake.
Just close your eyes and remember a week ago.
I actually don't need to, like, imagine it. I've seen it. Like, it's called a memory.
Short memory. Let's go. It's the postseason. Flush it.
Exactly.
I like the logic behind the Raptors keeping it close, but that's also the logic that I played in game two. And again, that fake comeback aside, it was a complete beatdown, and it was a big game for them. So no play for me. I will say this. This is the one play I kind of like tonight. Gary Trent Jr. has taken 20 shots in both of the games he's been healthy. That's just a lot of volume. And so if his total is around 17.5, what's it sitting at?
18.5.
Yeah, okay. So if it's right around, see, good. Look at me all guessing around this. He's averaged 20 points per game versus Philly. And so I'm going to ride with Gary Trent Jr. in that volume and the idea that he's going to be hitting the road and they're going to need his scoring tonight. I think that he's going to play a ton of minutes. I think he'll take a ton of shots. And so if there's a prop that I like, it's Gary Trent Jr. I think that he can get hot. I think that this is the kind of game where he's going to be less phased by the road than some of the other Raptors players. So I like his total at 18.5 even. I'm guessing, what's that at? Like minus 110? Mm. Like you're not paying any juice on that.
Minus 115.
Okay, cool. So yeah, right around there.
Ailish, I know you got burned on this in one of the earlier games, but has your confidence recovered in a Pascal Siakam over 23.5?
Well, look what he did on Saturday. If it's the same thing with the narrative, if he's going to have the game that can rival the weekend and string two together, which I hope, because that's the biggest question we had earlier in the show.
It's the only path to success.
You know, he has a lot to prove personally that this isn't a blip, that he can pull it together, and that first two games, or I guess at least the second game, wasn't what he has. Yeah. I mean, I want to go the narrative route always. I want to go the team, home team route. So that's certainly
I don't think it's just narrative. Like, he just dropped 34 and Philly didn't have an answer. They put five different guys on him in the fourth quarter.
So it depends on how Philly's going to match up against him tonight. But why could you not feel confident?
Yeah. Guys, stop it.
Okay.
Stop it. Also, you really don't need to add more equity or more weight to your Pascal Siakam viewing experience. Like, do you guys really feel as though you want more invested in Pascal Siakam? Like, there's already the intense emotional investment. There's the intense content investment.
Yes, I do.
And now you're going to put money on it as well? Okay, go ahead. Your funeral.
Yeah, I mean, I never gamble on Raptors playoff games as a matter of sanity. Like, I just, I can't. Mm-hmm. There's too much going on anyway. But
I love doing it.
Yeah, I wanted Ailish's take on the Siakam thing.
So, except for you know what it's going to be. You're like, Ailish, what are you going to do? And you, like, basically goat her into putting more money on
the Oh, I'm sorry. I put my teammate in a position to succeed, and I kick it out to the open shooter, knowing she's going to knock it
down. No, that's my point. I don't think you are. I think you're putting her in the position of, like, hey, she's got to be the homer who's like, hey, here's the homer pick. She's never going to fade the homer pick. When have you ever faded the homer pick? I don't think you ever have. All right, let's move on.
I mean, she bets against every ex-Leaf to score against them. That's amazing.
That's true, except for it's always Leafs.
I bet on Danny Green tonight to close out the series.
Ooh, actually, what's Danny Green's number at? Is 9.5? Because that's
plus 200,000 to dunk again ever in his career.
Yeah, I know. Ever again. again. Okay, let's shift over.
He's over 7.5.
7.5? That's actually a nice number.
-120.
Yeah, I actually kind of like that over. Again, they've been conceding open. The Raptors concede open corner threes. Well, they do. They concede open corner threes, and Danny Green has shown a propensity to knock those down. So
Danny Green over 1.5 threes is only -200, though. So
yeah, that's
they know
means.
He's going to do it.
No, so the book is like he's a dead lock essentially for 6 points, but will he get the extra one? Okay, so the Blue Jays, Red Sox tonight, -128 faves for your Toronto Blue Jays, your AL East leading Toronto Blue Jays. Blake, impressions on this line?
Yeah, so it's Berríos, Eovaldi. Berríos obviously just had a very good start against the Red Sox not very long ago at all on the 20th. He gave up 1-6 with 6 Ks to 1 walk. There were 8 hits, but it wasn't really one of the – like he threw 96 pitches over 6 innings. He was never in too much danger there of not having a good outing. So you like how he looked there. You're always a little hesitant about a pitcher seeing the same lineup twice in short order, but that works both ways because the Jays just saw Eovaldi as well. You look at some of the career history stuff, and we teed this up last week as well. You know, JD Martinez has faced Jose Berríos a lot, as have Bogarts, Jackie Bradley, Rafael Devers. None of those guys stand out as having monster lines above or below expectation there, but Berríos has just kind of been an average. He's been really hard on Xander Bogarts, and then otherwise it's been kind of the usual mix you'd expect. And then Eovaldi, you know, we know the book on Eovaldi at this point. It's a lot of hard stuff, and that can be hard to catch up to. But if you do catch up to it, it tends to get out of the park quickly. The most interesting one, given how bad they've been this year, is Kevin Biggio has homered twice off Eovaldi before. I don't know that I'm chasing that one.
He looks great lately.
Yeah, yeah. A negative WRC plus right now.
Maybe he turns it around, Blake. There's the positive spin.
I mean, look, we know what to expect with Eovaldi at this point, and it's hard in, hard out if you can make contact with it.
One Kevin Biggio home run, +750. But I wanted to ask you what you feel more confident about with pitcher strikeouts. They're both at over 5 or 5.5 between the two of them.
Yeah, I'd probably lean Eovaldi on that one. He's a higher strikeout guy. The Jays have been pretty cautious with their pitchers. Although Eovaldi hasn't gone past the fifth inning either, but he has hit the over on 5.5 all three starts.
Okay.
Even without getting into the sixth inning. So I think that's probably a safer play there. The Jays would really have to get to him early for him not to breach that, I think.
So this is actually something I was going to bring up in the Wake and Rake today. Is I had been making a lot of money to start the year on unders, but the books have caught up. And I actually wonder if tonight is a night where we actually play the other way, which is that the total's at 7.5. Like, 7.5 for this ballpark and for at least these lineups. I know the Blue Jays aren't as deep as when they have Teoscar Hernandez, but like, this is still Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Gurriel, George Springer, and a Red Sox lineup that's full of dangerous weapons as well. 7.5 feels a little bit too low for me. I don't know if I'm going to end up playing it because offense has been coming at such a premium, and the Blue Jays have scuffled a little bit to start the year here, but I think that the Major League Baseball, the books, were very much in line with high offense like of output to start the year, and now it has completely gone in a different direction. And so if you've been hitting unders, I don't know if we're going to continue to roll those plays.
Vegas has almost no choice but to overcorrect to the unders, because the book on the season was supposed to be pitchers are behind. They haven't started as much. They're not going as deep into games. One of the byproducts of that is you see more one-inning relievers, and those are generally tougher on hitters because you're not getting the third time through the order.
I think they screwed with the baseballs too.
Yeah. I made this joke the other day on the Jays pregame show that I could see a scenario where they've mixed in enough of the old balls that were dead and the old balls that were juiced that we're going to get a mix this year, and you don't know
which
one's
which game to game. Well, you have a 21 and 0 game on the weekend, so they definitely put in a couple of those balls.
So the league average right now, .232 batting average, .308 OBP, .368 slugging. The league as a whole has a .676 OPS. This is gross. Like, for this to be the case almost – at least a couple weeks into the season, like, we have to significantly change our benchmark of, like, what a good batting line is right now. Now, poor Kevin Biggio still isn't anywhere close, but, you know, something like an Alejandro Kirk doesn't look as bad when you realize the entire league has a 676 OPS. So, yeah, it looks like the books, over the last couple of days, it's looked like the books are starting to correct and going, you know, pushing a little further, pushing those lines down. Like, you even look around today, there's only one line in all of baseball. There's only seven games, but still only one has a line higher than 8.5. Yep. One is as low as 7 flat, which is really low.
So low.
Yeah, it's they're correcting in that direction for sure.
Now, granted, today is ace day, right? There's a lot of aces on the bump today, and that's part of the reason why these totals are so low. But I guess I'm just putting that out there as a bit of a PSA for people, is like, I think betting totals right now is a, you go against what the grain is. And I know all those totals are very low and that it's very tempting because you're looking at all these pitchers and saying, well, boy, what are you supposed to expect here? But I just look at it right now and say, it's too low for me. Like, again, if I'm playing 7 flat to go under, like, that's one bad inning. Like, that's not... The way that I really like unders and where I look for value is usually something that's going to take, I don't know, something especially, I usually bet them in-game because they're very game script easily. If you've got a home team that's up by a couple of runs, you know that better relievers are going to come in, so forth and so on. I just think that they've caught up right now, and to start a game, even if starters are on the mound, spots like 7.5 and 7, that's too low for me usually to buy in on stuff. Okay, let's move on. Our best bets, Ailish Forfar, where are you taking us?
Okay, so there's one singular hockey game tonight.
You can't possibly bet this hockey game.
I certainly am betting this hockey game. Yeah. And let me tell you why.
Okay.
Flyers, Blackhawks, two of the worst teams in the NHL. They both want to close out their awful season on some sort of a positive note.
Oh, that's the direction
you're going with this. The Flyers have scored 10 goals in the last two games, and the Blackhawks have allowed 8 in the last two games. The over is 6.5. Yes, I am hitting that, and I feel very confident in these two teams being a barn burner. So
love it.
There it is.
That's my best bet. That's the play. I thought you were going to pick a side in this game.
Oh, God, no. I don't even think it's just you can't. There's no way to lean. I mean, Blackhawks are favorites. Mine is 140. They should both be... Zero.
Yeah. Zero.
Zero. Yeah.
They just don't let you bet on it. They're like, hey.
The winner.
They like, you try to bet it, and then someone comes on the screen and scolds you.
Says, like, don't touch this unless it's the over.
Hey,
yeah, you know how all the betting sites have the, like, please bet responsibly. Like, I'm fit to bet. If you try to bet on that one, the alert comes up. You failed the fitness to bet.
Yeah. It's not even a real game. It's just sitting out there. They're not playing tonight. It's actually just a test to see if you'll bet that. I'm going to be going back to the NBA, of course.
Of course
I'm going back to the NBA. Of course. I'm going to pay a little juice tonight, but I'm going to go with the Mavericks on the money line. I don't like the Utah Jazz, and I know that Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell did their whole, what'd they say, screw the talk, whatever Rudy Gobert said when he was doing his fake tough guy routine, the fakest tough guy routine in the history of fake tough guy routines. Dallas back at home. Luka had his one game to ease back in. He didn't look great. He looked stiff. I actually think that they rushed him back. They should have sat him one more game. I don't know if it's a situation where... it would have improved all that drastically, but my only thought with Luka was you only needed a split and you needed to bring him back for a game like this. Home court, game 5, you got to win it. Dallas has been scrappy. They've been good in this series, and I think Utah is just kind of a weak team that in a tough spot is going to end up folding. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the money line play for the Dallas Mavericks. So that will be my bet tonight. Late one, but it's how I feel.
Yeah, that was my pick. I don't know what to I don't know the pivot here. I'm gonna go with the Houston Astros, just on the money line. They're at the Texas Rangers. I feel like I've bet against Dane Dunning every single time. I don't know why. He's not good, and he keeps finding himself against. Yeah, I hate Dane Dunning. Well, I love John Gray so much that to go from a John Gray start to a Dane Dunning start is so dramatic. But no, Framber Valdez on the hill for Houston. We just saw that team a couple games in a row, and you see how dangerous they can be if those bats get going. If Kyle Tucker comes to life at any point, it looked like they figured some things out at the plate yesterday, at least, or at least got some good juice underneath them. And it's not as if going Houston to Texas, Houston to Arlington, is hardly a road trip. So Astros on the money line. There were a couple other money lines that I liked, but they were a little too long. And with you taking Mavericks money line, I didn't want to go the longer one. So we'll go Astros minus 140.
So, Blake, you've essentially become LeBron in that finals where against the Heat, where you're just like pointing at Duncan Robinson every time down the floor. You see Duncan Robinson tell the story about how LeBron
played
into every single switch and that they attacked him on every single play. That's Dane Dunning to you. As you come down the floor and Blake sees Dane Dunning and he just points at Dane Dunning and is like, put him in
over,
the
yes, over,
foot,
over, over,
put him in the roll action. I actually think that that game, Blake, in terms of circling totals, where I thought, hey, this
Astros over.
Yeah, is the Astros team total over? Dane Dunning punches people out, though. I will say that.
I mean, he's got a 23% strikeout rate, but he also has an ERA up around 6.
He does. I'm just saying he's one of those guys that is frustrating with the over where they put guys on and then they get those strikeouts and key moments, and you go, I was expecting 3 runs here, and I only got the 1.
Tell you what, 1/4 of the balls players have hit in the air against him this year have left the park. So I'm going to bet on this being a case of, like we said with Uvalde, hard in, hard out.
Yeah.
Faster you throw. I mean, he's not a hard thrower, but guys have been able to tee off on that. He's also walking a lot of guys, which generally hasn't been in his profile. But I do wonder if the attempt to miss more bats is making him nibble more in a way that you don't really like for a guy who doesn't have bat missing stuff there. So our wake and rake today, April 25th. Is the Houston Astros on the money line, the Dallas Mavericks on the money line. We're big on Texas today. And Philadelphia, Chicago, over 6.5 on the NHL side, the lone NHL.
God, I wish that we had the Stars in an over or something like that. That
it would have been great
if we would have had the full
Texas parlay. Although I guess mine, you could go either side of it is Texas, so it doesn't really.
Okay, so
quickly,
we'll take it.
Quickly before break here, JD. The Nets are 1-point favorites at home against the Celtics. Celtics close it out or Brooklyn extends this?
Well, I was actually going to say to you that if you really didn't have an MLB pick, that I would have just flipped and taken the Boston Celtics. To me, the Celtics are the better team, and I don't know. We talk about the quit factor. I thought that was going to happen yesterday with Denver, and they pushed for a win. I'm a little reluctant to bet against KD, given that everyone on the planet is writing him off, and it's Kevin Durant. So I will say that, but I like betting against narratives at times as well, right? And to me, it's like if you have a overwhelming information that tells you one thing, and the only thing holding you back from betting the other side is, well, this could happen, usually it's a smart bet to go with that. So I'm going to be betting with the Celtics to close out the sweep tonight, but I also might be playing the over in the Kevin Durant prop, knowing that he's not going to go out with another 11 field goal game. So I think that could end up being both. Let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's talk to our buddy, Anthony Stewart.
I'm coming for his face swap kingdom.
Okay, that's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Ailish, Sports 590 The Fan.